scenario as I was driving to the temple this morning. Of course, I used to just live right down the street. Take me about 3 minutes to get here, so no big deal. But now I live all the way on the other side of Alachua, and sometimes I forget about the traffic that has come to be known here. So I'm sitting at the main light there, and it's just backed up like anything, and I'm in total anxiety and stress out. Am I going to make it to the temple on time? And I look up, and there's this huge truck in front of me, Owens & Minor, whose logo happens to be two big red letters, OM. So I took a deep breath, chanted OM, and everything was okay. Krishna, thank you, Guru. Krishna will come to us in the most interesting ways if we just open our eyes and heart. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Ballava Giri Vanadari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jana Ballava Giri Vanadari Yasura Nandanam Braja Janna Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Ballava Giri Banadari Asura Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janna Ballava Giri Vanadari Yasura Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radhe Shyam Radhe Shyam Radhe Shyam Jaya Radhe Jaya Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram, Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram. Jaya Gauranita, Jaya Gauranita, Gauranita, Jaya Gauranita. Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Nitya Lila Prabhista Astataris Tasisi Manis Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Premisa Koho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shirdwit, Shigirad, Harshivasi, the Gold of Abdul Nikita, CC, that Ha, Shama, Sunda, Gopa, Gopinas, Shama, Kundaradakum, Nikita, Gopa, and Kita, Grantaraj, Bhagavatam, Kija, Lokanath, Das Goswami, Kija, Gold of Hermanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the Lord C.C. Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So a reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 11th chapter, verse number 2. Sahu chakashe davalo daro daro. Yuru krama sya dara shona shoni ma. Dhammayamana karakanja sampute. Yatabja kande kalahamsa utsvana. Sa uchakashe davalo daro daro. Guru kramasya dara sona soni ma. Dhyamaya mana karakanja sampute. Yatabja kande kalahamsa utsvana. Anyway. Sa, that, Uchakase, became brilliant. Davala Udara, white and fat bold. Dara, Kansha, Api, although it is so. Urukramasya, of the great adventurer. I found that particular word interesting because generally when we think of Urukram, it refers to Vamanadeva. Vamanadeva, when we think of his fashion, of course, and think of him moving, his stepping. Of course, what does an adventurer do? Someone has to walk, someone has to go many places. So I found that an interesting connection there. Adarasona, by the transcendental quality of his lips. Sonima, reddened. Dadma Yamana, being sounded. Karakanja Sampute, being caught by the grip of the lotus hand. This Sanskrit phrase also caught my attention, being caught by the grip of the lotus hand of the Lord. I have a brother who is a very devout Christian, and every single correspondence, whether it's just a simple note to his siblings or a long letter, he always signs it in his grip. That's his key phrase, of course, indicating being always under the shelter and protection of the Lord. So I'll send him this. He can start using the Sanskrit version of that. I doubt that's going to happen. Yata, as it is. Abjakandi, by the stems of lotus flowers. Kalahamsa, ducking swan. Now that would appear to be some type of opposite, a duck and a swan, but actually it's the swan ducking under, as we'll see from the verse. And finally, utsvana, loudly sounding. Translation. The white and fat bold conch shell being gripped by the hand of Lord Krishna and sounded by him appeared to be reddened by the touch of his transcendental lips. It seemed that a white swan was playing in the stems of red lotus flowers. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The redness of the white conch shell due to the lip touch of the Lord is a symbol of spiritual significance. The Lord is all spirit, and matter is ignorance of this spiritual existence. Factually, there is nothing like matter in spiritual enlightenment, and this spiritual enlightenment takes place at once by the contact of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. The Lord is present in every particle of all existence, and he can manifest his presence in anyone. By ardent love and devotional service to the Lord, or in other words, by spiritual contact with the Lord, everything becomes spiritually reddened like the conch shell in the grip of the Lord. And the Paramahamsas, or the supremely intelligent person, plays the part of the ducking swan in the water of spiritual bliss, eternally decorated by the lotus feet of by the lotus flower of the Lord's feet. Om Jnana Timaranda Sya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksuhun Minitam Nyatasmai Sri Maha Mukam Karoti Vatsalam Pangumlam Jayati Girin Yakri Paratamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dini Tarunam Vancha Kalpa Tiru Vistra Kripa Sindhu Vaheva Cha Paditanam Pavane Provashti Vibhu Mono Maha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadha Sri Vasudi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The very first sentence of this should bring a vivid picture to the mind of any pujari. When offering the arti, when opening the curtain, the blowing of a conch shell is required. And this is exactly what you want, a fat, bold conch shell. Those of you that have had the occasion to have one of these little tiny conch shells that you can barely get a sound out of, and when you do, it sounds like a very high tinny trumpet, is not very pleasing. But the big fat conch shells with a nice hole and, you know, very white colored, and you blow those and they have a big deep resounding echo coming from them. You can imagine what the conch shells all sounding at the same time at the opening of the Battle of Kurukshetra. What a shattering sound vibration that would have been. This is the type of conch shell being described here. You know, it's a very significant conch shell, not a small, puny, okay, I got it for 2 rupees conch shell that we might have on, you know, some occasions to find in our hands. So very, very much now. In this purport, the quaint and at the same time poetic nature of Prabhupada's writing is something that very much endears him to his disciples and followers. The lip touch. We might use the phrase in different English of the kiss of the Lord. This would poetically be done like that. But the lip touch of the Lord on the conch shell. These types of phrases that Prabhupada uses throughout his books. I was just with the reading group last night on Chaitanya Charitamrita, and we were reading the first chapter of the Madhya Lila, in which Prabhupada is giving the details on how to visit all these different places, take this train line to go there and get off and take that rickshaw to this postage station and then go to the, you know. And it's just such a wonderful personalization of Prabhupada's presentation of the pastimes of Mahaprabhu and how to visit these places. We see the similar thing here. The style of Prabhupada speaking is unique to Prabhupada. It's just such a wonderful person. And then this closing sentence, which we'll go back to, but this closing sentence where he says, the Paramahansa plays the part of the ducking swan in the water of spiritual bliss, eternally decorated by the lotus feet of the lotus flower of the Lord's feet. Just such an amazing poetic style that Prabhupada has. There's that one story I always like to recall. One of Prabhupada's servants, I don't remember who it was, came in and Prabhupada was sitting there reading Bhagavatam. He said, "Oh, Prabhupada, you're reading your books." "Yes, I'd like to see what Krishna has written." Acknowledging the fact that he saw himself simply as an instrument. You know, so. It's no secret to anybody that I like a good fire. Kind of known for that. And I think it stems maybe from my childhood when I was, I might have been 4, maybe 5 years old. The local lumber yard caught on fire. It's about 4 blocks from my house, and everybody in the neighborhood went to watch. I mean, the entire neighborhood went. And it's a lumber yard, so you can imagine the fire was quite significant. Flames were leaping everywhere, and there were fire dogs, and it was back when they had the dogs on the trucks, the Dalmatians, and the fire trucks were all over. And, you know, my mom took myself and my sister down there, and we watched all the goings on, and I guess I got bit by the bug, and I've been into watching fires ever since then. And in Boy Scouts, I was quite expert at getting the fires going, you know, and the Boy Scouts, you're given one match, and that's what you've got to light the fire. And I was always very successful in that regards. And in these last few weeks, recovering from my surgery, not doing a whole lot, you know, my gutters really need cleaning if anybody's in or not. not being able to do a whole lot, I've spent a lot of time sitting in my backyard next to a fire and reading. And I've looked at the fire in a very analytical manner as a result of that, you know. And it's, you can take something that has nothing in common with the fire and place it in the fire, and then it becomes the fire. It's a very interesting progression. You know, the red hot coals are the result at the end. No matter what you placed in the fire, the end result is this bed of red hot coals. And you can hold that piece of wood that you might be putting in your hand, and, you know, it's very easy to do, and you put it in the fire, but once it enters into that fire, once it becomes transformed by that fire, once it becomes the coals that are that fire, you can no longer hold it. Not without burning yourself very severely at any rate. So a complete transformation takes place there. Now, Prabhupada, of course, we know where this is leading. Prabhupada uses this example many, many times, you know, that we need to transform our spiritual life in this way, from material to spiritual. And he explains it using that example of the iron rod, of taking an iron rod and placing it into the fire. The iron rod itself is cold, it's dull matter, it's dark in color, it produces no light. Yet, when it is placed in direct contact with that fire, the iron rod itself becomes completely transformed. You can see that the form is still there, oh, it's a rod, but its nature is completely changed. It's no longer a dull color, it's now brilliant red, even orange-like. It produces heat if you take it out of the fire and bring it around, it'll produce heat. It produces light, you can actually use it to illuminate an area. And if you touch it to something else, now it will ignite that item. So by this contact with the fire, this dull matter rod has become transformed, 100% transformed into something else, just by that association. This is how important association is. This is how essential the principle of association is. If we find ourselves constantly falling back into habits that we don't care for, or if we find ourselves not developing qualities we're anxious for, we might want to examine our association. And in many cases, that's due to the association with the mundane mind. But this process of association can transform us in a very, very significant way. Prabhupada says in the purport again. Similarly, even if you're in these bodies, these material bodies, even if you advance yourself in spiritual consciousness, I'm sorry, this is a quote from Prabhupada, even if you advance yourself in spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, you will be spiritualized. Your body will be spiritualized. You will be no more affected by material contamination. So this is our armor, so to speak. In the medieval times, when the warriors would go out to battle, they would put on particular armor. This was to protect themselves from any injuries they may sustain. It was difficult to wear. It restricted your movement somewhat, it would appear, and it was quite a responsible, heavy burden to have on you. But it was their protection and their shelter, and they never went to battle without it. In a similar way, it's a little bit restrictive, taking shelter of the spiritual energy. It means we don't do A, B, C, and D. It is a burden to carry, but it's a very happy spiritual burden. But by doing so, it gives us complete protection in all situations. So in the same way as these warriors, and in our modern times we have it in our different military and police forces like that, they have this Teflon armor, you know, like that. And so bulletproof vests and things. So this is to give them that protection. And you may even see sometimes a person wearing this, like in the jousting, they have this armor, they get hit by the jousting pole, they get knocked off their horse, but because they had the armor, they're able to get back up. Or someone gets shot with a gun and the bullet hits their vest, it knocks them over, but because they have the vest, they're protected. In the same way, if we're protecting ourselves with the spiritual energy of the holy name, with the spiritual energy of Sadhu Sangha, we may well fall. We may well be knocked off course. But by that association, because we spiritualized our focus, we will be able to rebound from that. Whereas in the mundane material condition, there is no possibility of overcoming the material nature. This is something I always used to tell my kids as they were little and growing up and going through the trials and tribulations of youthhood, is that there's Krishna, and there's Maya, and then there's you. Now, if you try to put yourself between you and Maya, you're not going to be able to stop Maya from coming forward. But if you put Krishna in the middle, between you and Maya, then Krishna will protect you in that way. So it's the same thing here. Prabhupada's saying that by that contact, you actually become spiritualized and will no more be affected by material contamination. And this verse gives a similar scenario here. The white and fat bold conch shell, being gripped by the hand of the Lord and sounded by him, appeared to be reddened by the touch of his transcendental lips. By contact with the Lord, the conch shell is transformed in this way. Now we know from the nectar devotion that there are seven different parts of the Lord's body that are red, that have that reddish hue. His eyes, the ends of his hands, the ends of his legs, his lips, his tongue, his palate, and his nails. So these seven items are noted in the nectar devotion as having a reddish tint to them in the Lord's body. Now, we know also that the Lord's lips are just like bimba fruit. We just recently spent an entire month singing about this. And we know that the feet and the hands of the Lord resemble red rubies. Interestingly, Kavi Karnapur gives a different variation on that. And he explains that Mother Jasoda then perceived the natural reddish lips of her child to look like banduka flowers. and that his feet resembled Java flowers. And then in that same paragraph, just a few sentences later, Kaveh Kornapur gives a different angle. Mother Jasoda then saw that her child's lips resembled a pair of red Java flower buds, and that Krishna's chin rivaled a ripe red jambu fruit. So these particular items, the rubies, banduka flowers, the Java flower, which is also known to us as a hibiscus, and the bimba fruits, these are all various shades of red. Crimson red, or kind of a pale red, all these different shades are there. And these are all in the different presentations in Krishna's body, in the parts that are red. And as Prabhupada says here, the redness of the white conch shell due to the lip touch of the Lord, this takes place by contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here again, by changing, the changing of the wood that goes into my fire, or the changing of that iron rod that goes into fire, or the changing of our material consciousness to spiritual consciousness, here in the same way we see that this conch shell has changed from milky white to having a reddish hue just by coming in touch with the lips of the Lord. So this contact, this association with this impact from being near, this has a direct result. And association in this way is very easy to understand, even from a mundane material point of view. Those who happen to be recovering alcoholics, for instance, it's understood that, no, you don't even want to go into a bar. You don't want to be any place where there is alcohol easily available like that. Because by that association, your determination, your strength to stay in a particular state of mind will become weakened. So this is the same way with devotees. We avoid certain types of circumstances, certain types of situations. We intentionally do not put ourselves in those because we know that that impact on us by that association can weaken our resolve. Therefore, we associate with those who are strong. We associate with those who can protect us. We associate with those who will give us further internal strength. Now, if I were really advanced, I could give a whole class on Krishna's lips and the gopis' desire for Krishna's lips and so on and so on, but I think we'll leave well enough alone with that because I'm not so advanced. But yesterday I was reading, yesterday I was reading about Vamsidas. And Vamsidas is the eternal associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, Vamsidas is an incarnation of Krishna's flute in human form. Quite an interesting situation. You want to talk about spiritual energy being personal. The flute actually manifested in human form as this devotee Vamsidas in Gaur Lila. And in the biography of Vamsidas, there's a couple of statements made which I just thought I'd share here. My dear gopis, what auspicious activities must the flute have performed to enjoy the nectar of Krishna's lips independently and leave only a taste of those lips for us gopis, for whom the nectar is actually meant? A little bit of indignation there. This is our thing, you know. This belongs to us, but somehow the flutes get most of it, and we just get the leftovers. The forefathers of the flute, the bamboo trees, shed tears of pleasure. His mother, the river on whose banks the bamboo was born, feels jubilation, and therefore her blooming lotus flowers are standing like hair on her body. Another one. Although the nectar of Krishna's lips is the absolute property of the gopis, the flute, which is just an insignificant stick, is forcibly drinking that nectar and loudly inviting the gopis to also come and drink it also. Just imagine the strength of the flute's austerities and good fortune. Another gopi said, "My dear friend, when I heard the sound of Krishna's flute, I tried to hide myself from the reaction of the vibrations, but I could not check the trembling of my body And therefore, all the friends in the house could detect my attachment for Krishna without any doubt. And finally, another gopi says, my dear friend, when I heard the sound of Krishna's flute, when I heard the sound of Krishna's flute, looks like I triple printed that. My apologies. At any rate, these are different avenues of other circumstances where Krishna's lips have touched something. And in this way, the flute becomes the object of both appreciation and dismay, just dismissal even, by the gopis, because of its getting to freely have the touch of Krishna's lips, which is something they desire, but they can't really get it except in certain very restricted circumstances. But this brings back to the point, a key factor in this verse, and that is the Prabhupada says, by ardent love and devotional service to the Lord, or in other words, by spiritual contact with the Lord, everything becomes spiritual. Transformation. There are so many transformational seminars nowadays. You can go online or in any scenario and find so many people offering opportunities to help you transform your life and become a better person or a more focused business executive or whatever the situation is. And they're all focusing on giving you a method to change yourself. We've just passed New Year's Eve. And New Year's Eve, New Year's Day is a time which everybody takes all these resolutions. Well, I'm going to do better this year than last year. Last year I wanted to do such and such, but I wasn't successful. But I'll do it this year. Actually, my next door neighbor works at Trader Joe's and said one of the busiest weeks of the year for them is the week following New Year's holiday. Because everybody comes with the idea of buying better foods and eating better and being healthier, and then business tapers off. So all these resolutions, you know. And then, you know, pretty much just shortly down the road, everybody's back to their normal bad habits and questionable activities, which are of little benefit to anyone. So this transformation idea, this is a very important thing to transform our material consciousness, and even in some cases, as Prabhupada says here, our material body. If, and only if, there's always a caveat in spiritual life. You know, the benedictions, the blessings come in the Bhagavatam, the Palashruti, comes with a, if you do this, you'll get this. But it's based on you doing this. So, based on our transformation is based on if we keep ourselves in touch with the Supreme Lord, with that contact with the Supreme Lord, with the regular chanting, with the regular reading, with the regular hearing, with the sangha of like-minded devotees. This and this alone is what will transform us. And it's not a one-time thing. We have to do it regularly. We have to do it every day. The material energy does not try to impact us just once. Ah, gee, I wasn't successful. Okay, I'll leave this person alone. No, the material energy is constantly knocking on our doors. Constantly knocking on the door. In every situation, trying to figure a way to get in. I can't help but think, and it's just because of my crazy mind, but the three little pigs and the big bad wolf. The big bad wolf's trying to get in any way. Okay, I can't get in the front door. I can't get in there. Okay, try to go down the chimney. Trying to get in there just to get to these pigs. So the material energy is like that. Constantly trying to get to us, to find our weakness and to get in there. And the only way we can avoid it is by keeping in contact with the Lord through this daily association. This is why Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya. Reading the Bhagavatam daily, hearing the Bhagavatam daily, keeping in touch with that spiritual sound vibration, with that spiritual energy on a daily basis. And in this way, we can protect ourselves. We can put on that armor of the great warriors of yore and be protected in that situation. So this and this alone is what will transform us. If we're looking for transformation, if we're looking to better ourselves, if we're looking to improve our spiritual life, this association, this contact with the Lord, this contact with the devotees, this is what's necessary. Now, Prabhupada makes wonderful use here of the word Paramahamsa. The Paramahamsa, or the supremely intelligent person, plays the part of the ducking swan in the water of spiritual bliss, eternally decorated by the lotus flower of the Lord's feet. Now, none of us consider ourselves Paramahamsas. It's just like, it's a standard by which, okay, there it is, but I'm not going to achieve it, I'm not there. But Prabhupada gives us a glimmer of hope, throws us, if you will, a line of salvation. He liberally defines Paramahamsa as a supremely spiritually intelligent person. Now that we might possibly think we can find as a benchmark in our life. Okay, I can become a spiritually intelligent person. You know, we can live, we can act, we can behave in such a way that it might actually be possible to qualify myself to attain that goal. To be a Paramahamsa? No, I'm sorry, I can't do that. But to be a spiritually intelligent person, all right, that's attainable. So Prabhupada is so liberal in this way. He uses this, I looked up in Vanapedia, he uses this type of attainable definition for Paramahamsa in several other places. And for what purpose? To twist the meaning out of the word? No. To encourage us that it is possible to attain this goal. He wants that we should become Paramahamsas, all of us. Because a Paramahamsa is someone that is focused exclusively on these swan-like qualities. And as Prabhupada mentioned, swan goes for the nectar. So he encourages us in this way. And to that end, he's given us this process. To that end, he's given us the means of devotional service. And to that end, he's given us the association of each other so that we can attain that goal. This is such an important thing. What's that Prabhupada says in the fifth canto? If one thinks that he can be Krishna conscious without the association of this ISKCON society, he's simply living in a hallucination. It cannot be done. In other words, we have to associate with his followers to develop the qualities, to develop the principle, to develop the direction, the determination that Prabhupada himself has. So this is an essential thing. And one way to do this is by reading the pastimes of the Lord. That's why Prabhupada puts so much effort into producing so many books. And as we heard earlier, today we're celebrating the pastimes, the appearance of such a devotee, Lochan Das Thakur, who wrote very significantly about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If we examine some of the very close associates of the Lord, we find that many of them had a physician background. They were doctors. And Brahmins also. This was their lineage. And the same is there with Lochan Das Thakur. His family came from Radhadesh, which is a famously described in relationship to Lord Nityananda as a part of Bengal where the Ganges isn't visible. And so when he was a little boy, he enjoyed the fortune of meeting devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And as a result of this, he became very, very much encouraged, very much enlivened to want to always be in that mood. From an early age, a young age, he took his guru, Narahari Sakrai Thakur, and guidance from him. We have here his opening paragraphs in the Chaitanya Mangala is a praise of Narahari Thakur. My hope of hopes is to be near the lotus feet of Narahari Thakur, to serve and worship him with my very life. The cherished desire of the fallen Lochan Das is to be allowed by the grace of Narahari to sing the glories of Sri Gauranga. My Lord is Sri Narahari Thakur, and I am his servant. Bowing and praying before him, I beg him to allow me his service. This is my only aspiration. Such a beautiful, focused mood of the disciple. First of all, just to hope to be near the lotus feet of their spiritual master and to serve them as the very goal of their life. This is a very, very wonderful mood. And he considers in this next line here that the to himself to be very fallen. Very fallen. But as fallen as I am, I have one cherished desire. We all have some cherished item which we keep very safely. I have one item which I keep in a little box in a particular place in the house. It's very dear to me. And it's very cherished. You know, it's something you hold very close to your heart. So Lochan says that that cherished desire of him, even though I'm most fallen, he admits, is to be allowed by the grace of my spiritual master to sing the glories of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. This is the mood of a speaker on the subject of the Bhagavat or on the subject of the devotees. We shouldn't at any time think that we're qualified to sit down and speak about these spiritual topics that we're given access to. We should understand that we're only able to speak these. Mukam karoti bacharam, pangum lanjayatirgiram. I have no qualification. I have no ability. I'm blind. I'm lame. But by your grace, I may be able to glorify. And many of the devotees, when they do this glorification, these great acharyas, they say, there may be so many faults here, but kindly you overlook those. I'm not the most perfect. I haven't written anything very nicely, but you kindly overlook these things and just hear the glorification. So this is the mood of Lochan Das, to simply beg that his spiritual master, Narahari, will give him the blessings to be able to properly sing the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he concludes, this is my only aspiration. Bowing before him repeatedly, I pray for this. So as Pran mentioned, that the Bengali poets, they had a style of writing this called Panchali. I actually didn't even think about the fact that you did probably grow up with this. You know, knowing this style and this meter. I've told this story many times. I had the opportunity once when I was traveling with Padayatra in our Bengali travels to give class in Sridhar Mayapur on Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I'm sitting there in the holy dham of Sri Mayapur in front of so many Bengali brahmacharis and reciting the Bengali verse and then apologizing to them for murdering their language. So it's a very sweet style of chanting, though. And this was commonly used in the glorification of the Lord, and this was specifically used by Lochan because it was the common language and meter of the population then. And so he composed his Chaitanya Mangala in this way. And it comprises five different types of song styles. At any rate, so his parents are both noted, and this is fortunate because many times we find in the lives of our Vaishnavacharyas that not so much information is there about their early life, about their parents. Sometimes only the father is known, the mother is not mentioned. But in this case, we have both parents. His father's name was Kamalakara, and his mother's name was Sadanandi. And he was their only child. And of course, we know what that means when there's an only child. He's the complete focus of all their love, all their devotion, all their attention. And, you know, he was very much admired by them, encouraged by them, and given all facility. He was sent to his grandfather's house for his studies and for his education. And at that time, at a very young age, he was married. But because of his great attachment for Gauranga, and because of, as a result of that, his detachment for material life, he, in the prime of his youth, went to stay at Srikanda with his Gurudev, Narahari Sakur, and learned instructions from him in not only the principles of the Bhagavad philosophy, but in kirtan. So this was all part of his upbringing. And you know, as a result of that, he was very detached from his whole family life. Now, the principal source of the book, of the information he uses for his Chaitanya Mangala, is the book of Muraragupta, the Chaitanya Charitamrita of Muraragupta. Here again, as I mentioned, another physician. Lochan Das explains in the Chaitanya Mangala, that very Muraragupta, who lived in Nadia, composed many Sanskrit verses about the life of Sri Gauranga. which he later arranged into the form of a book. Having heard these verses from Arari Gupta, Damodar Pandit taught them to me, and I memorized them with great delight. As these Sanskrit verses and the conception of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu imparted to me through Damodar Pandit developed within my mind, it flowed forth from me in the form of these Panchali verses in Bengali, which I write in glorification of the life and pastimes of Sri Chaitanya. This was a common practice because not everyone understood Sanskrit. And Lochan wanted to make the pastimes of Mahaprabhu available to the general Bengali population. And this Panchali form would allow him to do so. So he took these Sanskrit verses of Arari Gupta that he had heard through Damodar Pandit and presented them in this form. In the preface to this, he also gives a note to Vrindavan Das Thakur. He says, I offer my prayers of submission to Vrindavan Das Thakur with all my heart. The sweet song of his Chaitanya Bhagavat has enchanted the entire world. Now, of course, as we know, Vrindavan Das Thakur's Chaitanya Bhagavat was originally called a Chaitanya Mangala. And in a joint discussion with Lochan Das Thakur and Krishnadas Kaviraj, it was noted that the Vedavyas of Krishna's pastimes in Chaitanya Lila is Vrindavan Das Thakur, and that therefore the names were changed in that way so there would not be any confusion. Vrindavan Das Thakur's writing became Chaitanya Bhagavat, Lochan Das Thakur's writings became stayed as Chaitanya Mangala, and of course Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami had the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So these three great Vaishnava authors of the Lord's pastime each deal with a bit different subject matter. Vrindavan Das Thakur, primarily we see just the early pastimes, because his source for this did not have the access to the later pastimes. Lochan Das Thakur, similarly, very little of the later pastimes. It was Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami who was able to give a more elaborate explanation of the Madhya and particularly the Antya Leelas of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So these three authors together give us the complete story of the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Excuse me. Now one interesting example of respect Lochan Das Thakur mentions, and in our reading last night, we saw Krishnadas Kaviraj mentions this as well, that certain details of the pastimes were not revealed by Vrindavan Das Thakur. For example, Vrindavan Das Thakur doesn't give the full conversation that took place between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Vishnupriya just before the Lord left to take sannyas. And if in their writings, if one of the authors had already given that detail, then the other would just give a synopsis of that and then move on to other details that that writer had not spoken about in detail and expand there. In this way, respecting each other, but at the same time expanding the pastimes of the Lord. In our Chaitanya Charitamrita by Kaviraj, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, we don't see this conversation. So I thought, it's not very long. It's a little long, but anyway, I thought it'd be nice to just kind of review those here. So this is Lochan Das Thakur describing the conversation between Mahaprabhu and Vishnupriya before Mahaprabhu left to take sannyas. Seeing Mahaprabhu's eagerness to take sannyas, the moon-faced Vishnupriya said, with her voice choked in emotion, "Tell me, O Prananath, Lord of my life, and I shall take your order upon my head. Will you take sannyas? I have heard this rumor being circulated among the people in general. Hearing this, my heart is broken. If it is true, I shall then enter into the fire. You are the treasure of my life. Your beautiful form is always ever fresh and newly youthful. Will you give up everything and go away? Am I to be deprived of your association? If so, I might as well give up my life by drinking poison." Hearing the pitiful words of lamentation spoken by Vishnupriya Devi, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smiled a little and spoke as follows. "Listen, O you who are as dear to me as life itself, please do not be in anxiety. There is no need to worry at all. What I am about to say is for your own benefit. Please hear me attentively with your whole mind. Very important here. Sometimes we see that the author is saying, may the reader please listen very attentively. So Mahaprabhu is instructing like that here. Whatever you see in this world is all false. The only truth is Bhagavan and the Vaishnavas. Without that, whatever you see is an illusion. Know this is a fact. Sons, wives, husbands, ladies, fathers, mothers, and everything else. All these relationships are illusory. They are temporary and transitional. In one lifetime, we have one set of sons, wives, husbands, fathers, mothers. And in our next life, that changes. Other than the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, we have no real family. Everything else that we see as our family is an illusion of Maya. What we see as a man and as a woman is unreal. Beneath the surface of all souls are spiritual energy. The relationship between men and women is an illusory connection of Maya. Sri Krishna is the real husband of everyone. He is the master. Everything else is material. But unfortunately, this is not understood by the people in general. The soul is embodied in a mixture of semen and blood for which they are born into a body composed of stool and urine. In this way, the soul moves upon this earth in ignorance. From boyhood to youth to old age, we suffer different miseries, all the while mistaking the housing of the body as the real self. According to false ego, we make friends, maintain attachments, suffer abuse, and gradually are cheated by old age. Even hearing the truth, however, still our eyes are blind, and while our suffering in the material world brings us tears, we never worship Sri Govinda. You can just imagine being the wife of the house, and the husband sits down and gives you this information. By the way, this is all a big dream. Forsaking Krishna's service, we maintain these bodies in the material world of birth and death, trapped in the bondage of Maya. Mad with false ego, we have forgotten our Lord, and so we ensure our passage to hell. Your name is Vishnupriya, however. Fulfill the real purport of Vishnupriya, and do not lament for what is false. Remembering what I have said here, cast your worries at a distance, and always think of Krishna with your heart, day and night. I mean, we can understand this is the suitable type of instruction for someone on the verge of taking sannyas, as painful as it may have been for Vishnupriya to hear this. Having conveyed all these divine instructions to Vishnupriya, the Supreme Lord Sri Gauranga then revealed to her his four-armed form, thus making her understand his absolute position. At that time, he told Vishnupriya, "You see before you the Supreme Lord. Cast your Maya lamentation far away." At this, Vishnupriya Devi became joyful within her heart. Her grief and pain vanished, and her heart became blissful upon seeing the Lord's four-armed form. This particular instruction here fits with today's verse. By contact with the spiritual energy, as the concha became reddened, by contact with the instructions of spiritual principles from Mahaprabhu, the lamentation and grief of Vishnupriya was transformed. After hearing these instructions from the Lord and seeing his absolute form, Vishnupriya cast off her bewilderment, but her mentality of taking the Lord as her husband was still intact. At that point, she fell at the feet of the Lord and said, "Oh, my Lord, please listen to my request. Falling at your feet again and again, I implore you to accept my humble submission. I am certainly the lowest, having taken birth in this world of samsara, but you are the dearmost Lord of my life. This is my only wealth. Without you, I have nothing. Without your service, I have nothing." Saying this, Vishnupriya began to cry loudly, sobbing and sobbing again and again in an ever-increasing frenzy of sorrow. Seeing the affliction of someone so dear, the Lord bestowed his merciful glance upon Vishnupriya, embracing her with his eyes and so giving her his mercy. At that time, the Lord said, "Listen, O Vishnupriya, and give close attention to my answer to your words. I shall go there and there, but wherever I go, I shall always remain at your place. This truth I have spoken with great determination." Hearing this order of the Lord, Vishnupriya could understand that the Lord is supremely independent. At that time, she said, You must do what makes you happy. Let no one be an obstacle to your divine mission. Addressing the Lord in this way, Vishnupriya tearfully averted her eyes from the Lord's glance and fell silent. Thus went the conversation between the Lord and Vishnupriya, which is very painful to hear. So Lochan Das Thakur gives us this insight into this conversation here. And very, very wonderful. We know that Prabhupada was very fond of the songs of Lochan Das Thakur, particularly this Parama Karuna, a glorification of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda as the golden avatar saving everyone. And he particularly liked this. There are several recordings of him singing this, and very, very nice to listen to and absorb ourselves in. So we'll finish there. Interesting that he lived a very long life. He lived for 95 years. And throughout that time, constantly absorbed in the service and memory of his guru and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we'll finish there. If anyone has any comments, questions, corrections, we'll move on from there. And Seisha Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Did Lochan Das Thakur go to Vrindavan?
Yes. Yes. I didn't include that detail in today's reading. I wanted to focus on the conversation with Vishnupriya and Satyamata, but yes, he did. Anyone else? Yeah? No? Do you have something? Oh, somebody thinks you did. All right. Your ever faithful son-in-law. All right, we'll finish it. Oh, Pran? Yeah?
I was just wondering. By the way, it's very nice, beautiful class. To relish something, or even in spiritual realm, to experience the relishment of transcendental love of mellow, there has to be a person who's relishing the substance that relish and the process. So lover, Prabhupada translates sometimes lover, love, beloved, served, service, servant, like that, Prabhupada, you know, different purpose Prabhupada. Is, as you explained, that Bhakti Vardhan Thakur was a flute in Kanata. How they experience, you ever, I mean, I know I'm in a mundane experience in comparing, but how it really like, is a flute, is a now, is a person, but how, what is the, so the whole Krishna's Adharamrita, the lips flowing through him, is it like the flute is experiencing?
If I understand your question, it's how do we experience that spiritual...
Yeah. And then the fruit is a person.
Well, it's going to be unique for each individual. It really is. The spiritual energy is, you know, all-encompassing, and everyone has a role to play according to their particular nature, according to their particular inclination. It's just like within ISKCON. Someone's a book distributor, someone's a manager, someone's a cook, someone's just a layperson, someone's a pujari, everybody has a different role, but their advancement in Krishna consciousness, their contact with that spiritual energy, their access to moving forward is not restricted to a particular role followed by doing a particular thing. It's everyone has that opportunity. As Prabhupada would like to say, the person sweeping the floor can be just as spiritually advanced as the person addressing the deity. In Vrindavan, there was, what was his name, Vibhu Chaitanya, old devotee that cooked all the time, constantly, was the entire day cooking for Krishna and Balaram. And then when he became so old he couldn't cook, he would just sit and pass out the charanamrita to all the different devotees that came. So, different service. One so physically active and doing so much and significant result, and the other apparently just some guy sitting there giving drops of water out. But the spiritual blessing coming from Krishna Balaram to Bibhu Chaitanya was not determined by that. So it's our internal mood, and that internal mood will manifest by how we associate and what we do externally. And that will differ for each of us, you know. I mean, you're a perfect example of that. At one point in your life, you were completely absorbed in business activity. Very successful, very respected, and now that's set aside and you're completely absorbed in all the different activities here at the temple. Same mercy is coming, same blessings. You're the same focused individual, but two different lives. So what to speak of each individual person, you know? So, yeah. All right, we'll finish there. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Lord Chandasakura.